Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Leaders Playlist. Today's book we're discussing is called The Power of TED, The Empowerment Dynamic by David Emerald. We hope you enjoy. Dave, hi, welcome.
Welcome. It's good to be back.
Yes, it's been a while. We have a special guest tonight. Would you like to introduce our special guest?
We do. We have a special guest all the way from Ireland. Someone I have known all of my life. It's my mother, of all people. Do you want to introduce yourself, ma'am?
Hi, I'm Teresa, David's mother. And just to let you know a little bit about myself, I've 30 years experience as a psychotherapist, but I'm also a spiritual coach, which over the last 20 years I've been in that position as well. So I run groups, and I've actually in the process of writing a book and all that at the moment. So yes.
I don't know. You're just multi-talented like your son. It's amazing.
Today's book, we are going to be discussing The Power of TED, which stands for The Empowerment Dynamic by David Emerald. And Teresa, you're joining us because you recommended that we read this book.
I did, and I didn't realise how far it would go in Australia.
Was there a reason why you recommended to Dave that he read this book?
I thought as a part of the coaching, yeah, definitely. And just because of, you know, you're dealing with other people. So in giving them some knowledge about how they can change or progress as well, can add to what you do, you know. And I just thought it was very relevant as leaders as well to be able to read this book. Because it brings out, you know, David Emerald talks about the personal part of it, of the personal growth of a person. So, yeah, I thought it would absolutely help strengthen personal growth in everyone that you are dealing with as well.
Yes, definitely. And it's one we wouldn't have read other than you recommending it to us. But we're very happy that we did. We're very glad that we did. So this book was published in 2006, and it's a nice little short pocket book, 150 pages or thereabouts. So it's a nice, easy, another one of those books that's a nice, easy read and lots of stories, well, one big story in it that kind of helps to bring out all the good stuff that we'll be talking about.
And that's what attracted me to it, in the sense of it was recommended by a coach to me. But what attracted me to it was that they took a person's experience and worked through that throughout the book, you know, which was good. And it's something that we hit in life. Like we could hit those circumstances in life. Mm. We could hit the, you know, infertility, we lose a parent, we lose somebody, we have a breakdown of a marriage, all those things. But sometimes we don't know how we can deal with those, because we do go into, I suppose, overwhelm in it.
Mm. Yeah. We found that when we went through, that took us a book club, and we read through it, and we were thinking, wow, this is quite deep and insightful for something that's got only 150 pages. And you kind of see, look at yourself going, wow, I can see myself being the victim in a lot of these things. And then it was the thing, you wonder how far it got. We recently ran a coaching retreat in Queensland, and we gave the people a little assignment of reading this book for the book club on the day. And we kind of had a really, what was it, 30-minute book club in the bar after the day. And one of the attendees was really, really, she was so passionate about the book. She said it's changed her life just reading about it, and she could see herself in all those scenarios. And then the rest of the book just gave kind of similar kind of stories and a narrative. So we thought, wow, that's good. But yes, it has gone far, and we will keep on recommending this book to other people. But yes, simple book with a story that everyone probably can identify in some way and see themselves in it. I don't know. Renee, what do you think of the dreaded triangle?
The dreaded triangle being the victim or the persecutor or the rescuer in whatever problem you're focusing on. And yes, I definitely identified myself in there. many, many times as I was reading the book. Definitely victim. I'm not sure about the persecutor. You can tell me if I'm that or not, Dave. But definitely rescuer as
That's
well.
Funny. I'll talk to you offline about that.
Definitely rescuer as well. I liked his story around, well, they had a couple of models in there. One of them was the Fisbee model, not Frisbee, Fisbee model. And it's what you focus on generates your or creates your inner state, which then makes you behave in a certain way. We read another book recently where it called anxiety or a form of something that creates anxiety in people is monkey brain. Dave calls me out for it all the time. And it was interesting to see how he was, as he was explaining it in the book, how my monkey brain reinforces my reaction or my behaviour, and definitely that victim mentality as a result of that. So, yes, hit home a lot.
And I could see it. I recognise so much of myself in it, in the sense as a rescuer before I trained, mm-hmm. or before I started to do any kind of personal development. You know, this fixer, you had to fix somebody, mm-hmm. you know, or you had to help them out. You know, you thought you were helping them out, but really you were trying to fix them and make them something else, you know. I could see that, and how that wore me down to a state then that, say, someone didn't take on board what I was saying. My reaction would be hurt and everything else. And I go into panics over that, like, you know. But, No, definitely. Could see I think most people will see certain aspects of themselves, both in the victim, the rescuer, and the persecutor. Mm-hmm. We all have it within us at times. Yeah.
I even during the book club that we did and we read through it, we're thinking, how would we, because we coach teams and organizations are mainly kind of thing. Individuals, sometimes their roles and that, but mainly it's teams and organizations. And when I was thinking, how would we apply this framework, that victim rescuer, to a team? And we could see a lot of teams playing the victim and blaming, you know, leadership as the persecutor, you know, and the coach coming in as the rescuer and running through that dynamic. I think, Jesus.
I wrote that down on a post-it note as we were reading, as we were doing our book clubs. How can we coach without falling into that rescuer trap?
Yeah. And that's when I hear a lot of people say, oh, I'm going to coaching, and I'm in an organization at the moment, and they use that word really, really frequently, coaching. But they're not, they're actually playing the rescuer. They're not being a coach, they're rescuing, and they don't know how harmful they are being or to the resilience of the teams or in the organization by just jumping in. And I think maybe I should get them to read this book.
Maybe you should. Not a bad idea.
And it's a hard pattern to break, that rescuer piece, to actually start standing back and seeing seeing an individual as something different, that they're not hopeless or helpless, they're capable and have so much resilience in them. Do you know, it's hard to stand back. And I think sometimes as a parent, you forget that as well with your children. To know that there's a resilience in them as well, you know, to stand back and let them, give them their little wings to explore and do things, you know, as well. Yeah.
Dave's still learning.
Yes.
I am still learning, and I'm still learning every day. And, you know, my quote is, the more I learn, the less I know. So there.
Oh, I haven't heard you say that one ever. So how's that?
No, you've never heard that one. I'll say another one in a bit. Sound bites.
What's the opposite of victim?
Creator. Yeah, which is a really powerful place to be, you know, in yourself. And not knowing, I think some part of this book, which is part of what I would do with clients sometimes as well, is giving them some knowledge. You know, we talk about theories and practice, but when we actually give a person some of the knowledge, it helps them actually understand it more and then move forward. And I like this piece, like, okay, the Dave in the book knew he wanted to be creator, but he didn't know how to actually step into that place. Yep. And that's where the coach comes in, you know, as the challenger, you know, sort of thing. Asking the right questions and challenging the thought patterns that are there within everyone, you know? Mm. Yeah.
That's kind of the shoes we want to wear when we're coaching organizations as well, is help them find their vision or what some kind of outcome that they want so that they can focus on that and then identify those baby steps, I think, is what the author calls them in the book. Identify those little baby steps or those experiments to figure out if it's going to work for them or not, and just keep chipping away a little bit at a time because you can't change it overnight.
No. No. And there's that tension, you know, they spoke about from changing to the focus piece where you want to be. There's that real strong tension where you can be pulled back, you know, kind of all the time. It's just being able to measure those little baby steps and making them doable to actually reach the next part, you know? Yeah.
I love that little bit in the book where he talks about all tension wants to be resolved. And you're like, what do you mean? He goes, knock, knock. Yes, who's there? See, I told you. As it like, it's basically, it needs to be, you can't have it. And I've tried the same with teams. Yeah, if you ever try with a team or an individual and try to hold the silence or hold the space, and you just keep silent to let them give the space to think. Someone who has monkey brain, for example, always talks. They jump in without even processing what you said. Even if you ask them a question, they respond too quickly to be able to process the question. So you know, just I think just keeping that creative tension, I think is what the word we use right now, isn't it? Creative tension of silence, being able to process it, not always trying to resolve it straight away.
It's called dynamic tension.
Dynamic tension in
the book. In the book. But yeah,
that's better, actually. I like that.
It is better. I like it better as well. I'm going to stick with that. Speaking of that silence and creating that tension, I do that purposely. That's one of the hardest things when I'm delivering training courses is when I ask a question and get no response, and having to sit in that silence for an uncomfortable period of time. And someone always speaks up. You might be sitting there for a little while, but someone always speaks up and says something. So, yeah, it's just holding that space and letting people think at their speed.
Yeah. I know when I was facilitating groups and that silence came up, I would also name it in some way. I wouldn't get into it, but I just name it. Okay, we're really giving this some process here, or we're really thinking this over, because that's what's happening. You can nearly hear the cogs of the minds going while the silence is there. They're really thinking about it. Do you know?
Yeah.
But it makes people really uncomfortable, especially in a group. Extremely. Can you see people fidgeting in their chairs, and they're looking around for someone to say something? And even when we try to have a reflective exercise, they never take the time to reflect. And they even say, let's go for 3 minutes, just do 3 minutes. By the first minute, you'll see people, eyes open, looking around. This is crazy. I don't know whether it's time seems so long when there's silence, or time flows quickly when there is noise and people talking and activity.
And you have to realize that there is that sense of when you're in a group, you're afraid to put yourself forward sometimes to say something, or you think you're going to say something that's going to be stupid, or someone's going to come back at you over something, you know. So when you set the ground rules for a group, it's absolutely, you know, it helps that people are not under pressure to speak, or they don't have to speak, or, you know, all those kind of things. That builds that sense of helping that silence as well, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good ground rule. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think I got over the guy's name is David.
It's a very uncommon name. So, yes, it's like a coincidence.
I always tell people that my mum named me after Davy Jones from the Monkees, and they all believe it. I don't even know if it's true. But...
No, I got that from Spirit. Sorry.
Oh, it was the Spirit of Davy Jones that told you. Okay.
I was named after a musician as well. So there you go.
I just tell people that and they believe it.
I just love the name. It's different. You know?
My own little in joke with myself. I liked the creator, and I was thinking, you know, leadership, and like if leaderships in companies where more had that creative, you know, mentality or whatever, it would be really good. And one of the quotes in it, or one of the words was just, tomorrow will be like a fresh canvas on which you paint your own unique contribution to the world. I think that's quite a beautiful little saying, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you can get up every day, you could do that. Every day will be a fresh canvas. Whatever happened yesterday, you can move on. Where the victim will stay in that, right? That's the aesthetic. Whatever the problems are, your problems are always compounded when you stay in that victim. When you're a creator, it's a move forward. I think that's what he says. I can't remember the baby steps.
The victim focuses on the problem and the creator focuses on the solution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The goal. Yeah.
Well, I think the other quote from me that really I took away from it was, everything can be taken from a person, but one thing, the last of the human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way. And that's key. That's for me is the key thing. We all go through life, and I'll be in the victim. Well, sometimes things happen to us out of the blue. There's many different tragedies or circumstances that befall people. The way is, and even people's responses to you when you said you try and run a group or facilitate something. And the key thing for me, that is, it's you choose your response to it. That's right, that's the creator for me. You can choose to be the victim or you can choose to move forward and move with the positive.
And the other aspect that I would have taken as well, which I liked, was the spiritual part of it. You know, looking at yourself as a spiritual being in a human body, in the sense of that we're here to learn, we're here to evolve constantly. So if we can bring that aspect into what we're doing in a daily life, we're looking for something to better ourselves, to better help better others. We're looking for a bigger picture than the picture of the victim, which is so, what would I say, curtailed. But when you have the spiritual aspect, it just brings it wider out within yourself and within others as well. Okay, you didn't think of that one, did you?
Well, we're not, like, I want to say I'm not a very spiritual person compared to you, Mom, but...
No, I think there's a difference between spirituality and religion. You are a spiritual person. Each one is a spiritual person. We probably don't acknowledge it. But if you can be a creator, what are you following? You're following your own inner guidance, which is your spirit. You know? So, yeah.
One of the questions that I liked towards the end was, are you creating consciously or sleepwalking through your life, simply reacting to what comes at you? Oh, that was a very, very powerful question.
I think for most of us, we have slept. I mean, in my experience, I know I've sleepwalked through life automatically. You know, it's almost until you start to think, is this life my life? Or is this my way of being in life? You know, we do. We just keep going automatically until we stop and question that.
Mm. Yeah. But it's an easy habit to get into. It's like, I don't know, a book we read, it was about the habits or something like that, about when you get into a car and you just drive home the same way and you zone out. And don't even sometimes know how you got home.
Don't even go there. Yep. I do that
and
all the time.
Some days and some weeks for some of us, like that's a week, right? You go, I'll get up Monday morning. And before you know it, it's like Friday afternoon. And you went, what? How the fuck did I get through that week? What did I do? What did I do again? I can't even remember. What did I do Wednesday? But it is. I think a lot of people at the moment, that I think with COVID as well, that went through, that was probably another kind of factor that led to a lot of people sleepwalking through because, yeah, they didn't know what the next day looked like. And they kind of slept through or sleepwalked through their life and reacted to whatever threw them. But I'm trying to change that. Renee throws that at me about sleepwalking through things. No 5-year plans for me or things like that, but I'm changing that.
I think, you know, you can start your day, you know, in a conscious way. You know, it's just that first step out of bed. And whatever conscious way you do that, and you then begin to keep that step going through the day, you know. But I think sometimes we forget, sometimes sleepwalking as well can be overwhelmed. You know, if you're really overwhelmed, you're in survival. So you just keep going. And that's what sleep, you know, we sleepwalk until we get out of that process.
Yeah.
You know.
One of the suggestions, or one of the ways that's in the story anyway, one of the ways that he does that for 20 minutes a day, sit quietly in gratitude, invite guidance, affirm your orientation. So are you going to be a victim today or are you going to be a creator? Review yesterday's choices and decide on 3 baby steps for today.
That's my daily practice every morning. I actually get up. I would probably be 20 minutes to half an hour where I journal, meditate. I read something positive for the day and go. And that's it. And it does help. If I don't do it, I kind of feel disorientated.
Yeah.
Knocked off, you know.
Change my way of working to deliver outcomes rather than focus on outputs. So instead of like the 7 or 8 hours where you're trying to be as busy as you're trying to do everything, I pick the 3 things I want to complete by the end of the day or the main big thing I want to complete by the end of the week. And if I do that in the first couple of hours, then I kind of, you know, look to help other people in that way. But like, it's better than like going, I'm busy, 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 or attend all these meetings. I look and go, nah, I don't need to be at that meeting. Maybe I can go help someone do something else. That'd be a more value than attending a meeting where I'm sitting there going, this could have been an email. why am I here? Which happened to me today. I was in a 3-hour workshop and I sit all the way through it. Why am I here? I am adding no value to this. And I should be somewhere else doing what I should actually like doing. But yes, so there's the thing. Don't try and work the 8 hours and be busy 100% utilized all the time. And thing. Pick 3 things and get them done. And over time, that'll build up. So a little similar to your practices, but obviously not as spiritual.
I think every practice you do is spiritual, David, if you do it consciously. There you go.
See, you know? See, Renee, I told my mom. You see where I get it from?
Look at him blushing. I've never seen him blush before.
I can't argue with my mom.
Teresa, you've already covered this a little bit, but who would you recommend read this book?
Who would I recommend? I suppose anyone who is caught in that, who wants to change their life, who's questioning, okay, why am I so unhappy? Why is my life this way? What can I do to get out of this place? Looking for answers, somebody looking for answers, definitely read the book. Because the information that's there, it helps. It'll either help you get some insights into the next step to go to a coach or go get some support. Because when we're in those situations and we're like a little hamster on a roundabout thing, do you know what I mean? It's like trying to get someone to bring us in a different direction or to open that door for us. And we can't do it. Sometimes without support, we need the support to actually get going, you know. So, and for leaders as well.
Definitely.
Anyone who is in a leadership role to read it as well. I always think when we're, you know, we don't give enough credence to people that are, you know, the personal development or the continuous personal development of leaders, you know. So, yeah, definitely. Leaders definitely. As well. Yeah.
I'd have to say similar. Yeah, like this. If I think it's right for anyone. The one caveat I would say with that, if you're going to recommend this book to someone, don't go, hey, I read this book. Guess what? You're the victim in this book they're talking about. Because that's really bad coaching. But yeah, so don't give it to people with the intention of trying to call them out and say, that's you in the book, the victim, or the persecutor, or something like that. Let them discover that for themselves, if they are not.
Yeah. Teresa, thank you for joining us. It was so nice to meet you, and it was lovely to hear your perspective on the book as well, because two agile coaches talking about books can get a bit boring. So, yes, thank you for bringing in some for that different perspective.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks, Matt, for getting up and being part of this. And I'm recommending the book. It's definitely one that will stay with me for a while.
Yeah, good.
Dave, till next book.
Yes, Renee. Till then.
Thank you for listening to the Leaders Playlist. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Please be sure to share our podcast with your family, friends, and work colleagues. Until next episode.